Wednesday night, but we were talking yesterday and we thought it'd probably be a good idea just to go back and pick up at the beginning of this. Where at this particular moment, where is Paul?
Caesarea.
And he's about to leave there. Why?
He appealed to Caesar, so they're honoring his request.
Okay. So we're still kind of dealing with what happened to him in Jerusalem when the Jews got upset with him. They saw him in the temple. They accused him of bringing a Gentile into the temple grounds, which he did not do. Things went from bad to worse real quick. It just kept escalating. And eventually he ends up in Caesarea before the governor of Judea, Felix, and then Felix leaves his office after a couple of years, and Paul's still in custody, and Festus takes responsibility for him. He hears him, and he doesn't know what to do with him, and so Agrippa happened to come down and kind of do his head of state sort of thing, I guess you might say, visiting with the new governor and everything. And so Festus says, I've got this prisoner, and since you're an expert in the custom of the Jews and so forth, I'd like for you to hear him. And so Agrippa agrees, and there's a great pomp and ceremony, and at the conclusion of all that, Agrippa says, you know, if this fellow hadn't appealed to Caesar, he should be let go. And so that's what they do. Festus has still got the same problem he had before. I'm sending this prisoner to Caesar, and I don't really have any charges against him, anything worthy of death or anything. And so this is chapter 27 kind of covers the trip, I guess you might say, or at least a good part of it. It says, and when it was decided that we should sail to Italy, they delivered Paul and some of the other prisoners to one named Julius, a centurion of the Augustan regiment. The Augustan regiment was probably a special regiment of officer couriers belonging to the emperor. Some think that perhaps Julius had accompanied Festus from Rome to Caesarea, and it was now time for him to return. I don't know. The text doesn't say that. But anyway, He is fulfilling his responsibility. Verse 2 says, so entering a ship of Admetritum, we put to sea, meaning to sail along the coast of Asia. Aristarchus, a Macedonian of Thessalonica, was with us. Admetritum was a harbor town south of Troas. It was an important shipbuilding center. Aristarchus, a Macedonian of Thessalonica, was one of the messengers of the churches. If you go to 2 Corinthians chapter 8 and verse 23, you remember that one of the reasons that Paul was going to Jerusalem, he has collected a benevolent treasury for the needy saints in Jerusalem. And as he has went from congregation to congregation, encouraged them to participate in this benevolence, he has also strongly encouraged them to send their own messengers rather than him having all the money and therefore all the responsibility and maybe all the blame or whatever. But just to keep everything above board, he wanted each congregation to have its own member messenger, or at least designate something. Like it could have been someone from another congregation that could have represented them. But anyway, Aristarchus was one of these messengers. And he has traveled with Paul to Jerusalem to deliver this benevolence to the needy saints there. And find that in Acts 20 and verse 4. He is described as a fellow prisoner with Paul in Rome in Colossians chapter 4 and verse 10. So he's not just going along for the ride. He's been taken into custody too. This is the first time we kind of have note of that. But he is a fellow prisoner with Paul. Here's the map that Dale had up for us Wednesday night, and I thought it was a pretty good map. There's a lot of maps of this, but this is probably the most colorful. So that helps, doesn't it? Yeah, you like that. So, you know, here they are, Caesarea. They're going to travel up here to Sidon. They're going to come along the east side of Cyprus because of contrary winds. I think sometimes we assume, well, why didn't they just leave here? And would they have normally left here and went across here and up here to Rome? Not necessarily. This particular ship is probably not what we would say a seagoing ship. It's probably a little bit smaller of the ships. Their intention is really to stay close to shore, and that's the way most of these ships at this time, these sailing ships, they stayed fairly close to shore. They might have been in sight of the shoreline. They might not have been, but they've been fairly close, as close as they could safely do that, and as whatever the winds would allow them to do and so forth. These were not ships under their own power. They depended upon the wind, and you've got to know what you're doing to sail a ship, especially if you're sailing it crosswind or into the wind. And so this is the time of the year that you really don't want to be crossing the Mediterranean Sea. But it could have been that under normal circumstances that they would have preferred to have gone along the west coast of Cyprus and up here to Myra. This is an important seaport up here, and we're going to see that here in a little bit. Nevertheless, just kind of keep that in mind, that the text says that they intended to stay close to shore. So the next day we landed at Sidon, and Julius treated Paul kindly and gave him liberty to go to his friends and receive care. As we saw, Sidon is about 70 miles north of Caesarea. Under favorable winds, the distance could have been covered in 24 hours. So there's the map again. You can see again where Sidon is. Verse 4 says, "When we had put to sea from there, we sailed under the shelter of Cyprus because the winds were contrary. And when we had sailed over the sea, which is off Cilicia, Pamphylia, we came to Myra, a city of Lycia. There the centurion found an Alexandrian ship sailing to Italy, and he put us on board." So, you know, Pamphylia, Cilicia, Pamphylia, Lycia, those are all, I guess we might say, states, regions. So that's the coastline that they are sailing by, passing that coast and coming now to Myra in Lycia. "The winds were contrary. The island of Cyprus provided shelter from prevailing winds, which were against them." So the wind must have been out of the west. You can sail into a west wind, or you can sail into the wind, but it's not easy. It's easier if you can kind of use the wind to your advantage and get sideways of it and turn your sails and get it. I don't know, I can't explain all of it, but anyway, you get it kind of backlashing into your sail. Yeah. It's called tacking, but did that explain everything to you? But what the wind's doing, it's kind of coming around one edge and filling in the backside. You can kind of see this sometimes on a car or a truck. Have you ever followed a pickup truck on a dusty road and how it's flat on the back and it just, like all the dust and everything just sucks right to it? It's coming around and going to it. And that's kind of what they do when they tack, is that they get that wind coming around, and then it comes around the back side. It whips around the back side of it, and you can kind of touch sail. You're not going as fast as what you would be if the wind was behind you, but you can make progress. So what they're doing here is they are lessening that west wind by the island. Okay, the wind's still coming out of the west, but it's not as strong because the island has slowed it down a little bit. At Myra, they changed ships. They found a ship, an Alexandrian ship. That's, where's Alexandria?
Egypt.
Okay. So, you know, you've got ships crossing the Mediterranean, coming up here to Myra. They've come up with their wheat, primarily, we're going to find. Grain ships from Alexandria, Egypt, frequently made the voyage to Rome. So here's this Alexandrian ship. It is going to Rome, but it comes to Myra first because it's an important seaport. And they've probably unloaded a good bit of their cargo at Myra, but they're taking more on up to Rome. Yeah.
And so if they're carrying cargo from one place to the other, they're kind of making their way around the Mediterranean, and they finally found one at Maya that is going directly to Rome, it would appear. Maybe they're going to stop at Corinth or someplace. But they're just, the centurion is looking, kind of looking passage on any vessel that's kind of heading that way, and making their way across the Mediterranean.
Yeah, these aren't cruise ships. You know, the Mediterranean's got cruise ships on it now, but it didn't have cruise ships on it, you know, in Bible times. These were working ships, they're cargo ships. Would they take passengers? Yes, they would. And that would be part of their, you know, part of the way that they would make their income and so forth. So, you know, these were not Roman warships. They weren't part of the Navy. These are, all of these ships are merchant ships, and their sailors are very skilled, as we're going to see. So verse 7, when they had sailed slowly many days and arrived with difficulty off Cnidus, the wind not permitting us to proceed, we sailed under the shelter of Crete off Salome, passing it with difficulty. We came to a place called Fair Havens near the city of Lasea. So they're up here at Myra. They're intending, of course, to probably cross here and then get over here eventually and come up this way. But now that they come, you know, basically, you know, once they leave Myra and come around this point, they're facing that west wind full force. And so now they are tacking. And it's very slowly that you back and forth. You have to go right and left, right and left, right and left to go forward. And so that's what they're doing. And eventually you get up here to Cnidus, and I don't know when they made the decision to come down here to Crete, but it probably didn't take very long. And it's very possible that this Alexandrian, this Egyptian ship, might say, well, why didn't they just leave Myra and come right down here to Crete? Well, they had business. You know, they had business up there, most likely. And they needed to sell some more of their wheat. But nevertheless, they realized that they're not going to be able to go this way. So we'll come down here to Crete. Again, get on the lee side, I guess you might say, of the island. Come around. There's that city Lycia But the port is Fair Havens, which it's a haven when it's fair. When it's not fair, it's not so fair. It's like, you know, there's a lake up in Ohio called Pleasant Valley, and in my opinion, they have misnamed that lake. Because I don't know, it seems like every time I've been on it, it hasn't been so pleasant. But it's a little narrow lake, and the wind comes blowing down it, and you've got to watch what you're doing. But and I kind of get that impression of Fair Havens. It's not always so fair. When the weather's fair, it's probably pretty nice. But the wind, this west wind, was blowing right straight into it. So that's not a good place to spend the winter. And at this particular time of the trip, that's really what this ship is thinking about doing. You know, this is the wrong time of the year to be going west on the Mediterranean Sea. There's a lot of storms, a lot of shipwrecks. Probably the best thing for us to do is just put up here for the winter. Wait until spring, and then we'll head up that way. So it's about 130 years from Myra to Cnidus. With good winds, the journey could have been made in 24 hours. With the wind blowing out of the north, they could not continue to the west. So they decided to sail to and pass under the cover of the island of Crete. Fair Havens is not much more than a bay, which not offer much protection. Lassia was about a two-hour walk from the bay, so that would have been, I don't know, maybe 3 miles, I guess. So now, when much time had been spent and sailing was now dangerous because the fast was already over. The fast was another name for the Day of Atonement, which fell on the 10th day of the Jewish month of Tishrei, our September, October. So you know what the weather's like in September. It's changing, okay? That's what they're dealing with. The weather's changing because the axis of the earth and its relation to the sun and the equator and the air currents and so forth, that what was north is now south, and it just causes a big atmospheric stirring of the atmosphere, I guess you might say. Paul advised them, saying, "Men, I perceive that this voyage will end with disaster and much loss, not only of the cargo and the ship, but also our lives." Nevertheless, the centurion was more persuaded by the helmsman and the owner of the ship than by the things spoken by Paul. And because the harbor was not suitable to winter in, the majority advised to set sail from there also, if by means they could reach Phoenix, a harbor of Crete opening toward the southwest and northwest, and winter there. So here's the idea. Fair Havens is not such a great place to spend the winter, so let's sail on up here and get up here. It's a little bit more protected. Sound like a good idea.
Doesn't look far.
Shouldn't be too hard, right? Especially skilled sailors, and they are. But don't mess with Mother Nature. sometimes you think, well, I think we can make it. You know, what's the last thing you hear before somebody calls 911? Hey, guys, watch this. You know, that's kind of the situation. Yeah, we can do it. Paul said, "I perceive that if we leave here," in other words, it's my opinion that if we leave here, it's going to end in disaster. You're going to lose the ship, you're going to lose your cargo, and people are going to lose their lives. Okay? That was just his perception. He had been on the ocean before. He'd been shipwrecked before. This wasn't just a feeling that he had. He was saying, based on my experience, this is what I think will happen. And I suppose if any of us were the captain here of the Roman guard, we would have reacted the same way. Well, captain of the ship, what do you think? We can make it. Yeah, we can get up there. It's not very far. We can do it. It's a good ship, good crew. We can make it. You know, we probably would have made the same decision that he made. Any other observations there?
Well, it's interesting that the majority reached the decision, so they kind of let everybody have their say, and it would appear. In verse 12, at the end of the
yeah.
The
majority advised.
So it kind of looked like the captain kind of let everybody have a say, and it looked the most agents in the captain just do that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's dangerous, but it's a lot better harbor, and the ship's not going to sit here getting beat up, you know, by the wind. And, we probably would have joined right in with them. Okay, and when the south wind blew softly, a little bit change of wind here. This is just what you want. Supposing that they obtained their desire, putting out to sea, they sailed close by Crete. But not long after, a tempestuous headwind arose called Euroslidon, I guess, something like that. So when the ship was caught and could not head into the wind, we let her drive. And running under the shelter of the island called Claudia, we secured the skiff with difficulty. When he had taken it on board, they used cables to undergird the ship, and fearing lest they should run aground on the Syrtis sands, they struck sail, and so were driven. And because we exceedingly tempest-tossed, the next day they lightened the ship. On the third day, we threw the ship's tackle overboard with our own hands. Now, when neither sun nor stars appeared for many days, and no small tempest beat on us, all hope that we would be saved was finally given up. So here they are again. They attempt to make this little trip up here, and that doesn't work. They've got a south wind. That's what they want, but. Right. And so you kind of wonder if what was happening, that, you know, the text doesn't say that, but the possibility is that in here close to shore, it appears like the winds are out of the south. Well, was the wind out of the north and kind of like we talked about that vortex, you know, coming in behind, you know, your perception was that the wind was out of the south. But when they get out here away from the protection of the island, they're caught in that north wind, strong north wind. You know, I don't know, not your normal north wind, very high winds. And basically they lose control of the ship. You know, they're not sailing anymore. They're just trying to go with the flow, I guess you might say. Yep. Right. Yeah. Yeah, you can always depend on the Weather Channel. All right, so a Euclidean was a fierce wind from the northwest. It said we let her drive. Letting the ship drive means that they had to turn the ship off course and let it run with the wind. The skiff was used to go to shore while the ship was in port. It was typically towed behind the ship. That's not doing them any good back there. So they said, let's get that up here on board. So they, with great difficulty, bring it on the ship. The cables were also known as hanging gear. That was part of the ship's tackle if needed. And what they would do is they would take these cables, throw them over the bow of the ship, probably, or over the bow of the ship is probably the easiest thing to do. Guys on each side let it down in the water. You know, you got guys on this side of the ship and guys on that side of the ship. They're each holding the thing, and they let it down, and then they walk it back and then bring it up and then secure it from side to side, just adding to the strength of the ship, kind of strengthening it, shoring it up. I suppose you could let it down from the stern too, but you've got the rudders and all that stuff back there, so not likely they would be dropping it over the stern of the ship. But so they're putting in this securing tackle that they have to keep the ship together, keep it from moving back and forth so much. The Syrtis Sands were gigantic shifting sandbars off the north coast of Africa, west of Cyrene. They lightened the ship. A lightened ship, of course, would ride higher in the water. So anything we don't need, throw it over. Without sun and stars, they had no idea of their location. And that's hard to imagine, isn't it? You know, even on a cloudy day, you've got some concept of where the sun rose and where it set. They didn't. They don't know if they're going north, south, east, west. All they know is they haven't sunk yet. Right. Yeah, they lighten the ship. They throw stuff out to lighten the ship, get it setting higher in the water. Okay. But after a long abstinence from food, then Paul stood in the midst of them and said, "Men, you should have listened to me and have not sailed from Crete and incurred this disaster and loss. Now, I urge you to take heart. For there will be no loss of life among you, but only of the ship. For there stood by me this night an angel of God, to whom I belong and whom I serve, saying, 'Do not be afraid.'" Paul, "Do not be afraid, Paul. You must be brought before Caesar, and indeed God has granted you all those who sail with you. Therefore, take heart, men. For I believe God, that it is just as he told me. However, we must run aground on a certain island." Okay, so Paul's had this angel speak to him and guarantee him, "Paul, you're going to live through this. Everybody with you is going to live through this. Everybody on the ship is going to live through this. But the ship... you're going to lose the ship. It's going to run aground. You're going to lose the ship." So Paul knows that. But he begins his conversation by saying, "Men, you should have listened to me." So you know, he realizes that he's facing the same dilemma that he faced at Fair Havens. You know, well, this is my opinion. We need to stay here. And at that time, that was just his opinion. He says, I'm afraid that if we sail from here, we're going to lose the ship and we're going to lose lives. And, you know, but now an angel has spoken to him. So he can speak with more authority. But before he tells him about the angel, he tells him about his own credibility. You know, you should have listened to me before. You know, and now they're saying, yeah, we should have listened to you. And now he bolsters that by telling them what the angel had told him. You know, we're all going to make it. We're all going to live. Okay, the ship is going to be lost. Okay, it's going to run aground on an island, and it's going to be lost. But we're going to be okay. Very important point here that he says in verse 25. He says, "I believe God that it will be just as he told me." You could preach a lesson off of that. Are you troubled and afraid about many things? Jesus said, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. You believe in God, believe also in me. It will be just as God told us. And we might not know what the state of our earthly ship is going to be as we sail through this life, but we know that the vessel of our soul is going to come into safe harbor with him hereafter. We can believe what God has told us. God hasn't told us by an angel, you know, directly like he did with Paul, but God has told us what our life is about. He's told us who God is. He's told us how to live before him. He's told us how to escape the price of our sins in death, to let his son pay that price for us. I believe God that it will be just as he told me. It's a good point to keep in mind on any subject that God addresses. Anything else there? Now, when the 14th night had come, as we were driven up and down in the Adriatic Sea, about midnight the sailors sensed that they were drawing near some land. And they took soundings and found it to be 20 fathoms. And when they had gone a little farther, they took soundings again and found it to be 15 fathoms. Then, fearing lest we should run aground on the rocks, they dropped four anchors from the stern and prayed for day to come. And as the sailors were seeking to escape from the ship, when they let down the skiff into the sea under pretense of putting out anchors from the prow, Paul said to the centurion and to the soldiers, "Unless these men stay in the ship, you cannot be saved." Then soldiers cut away the ropes of the skiff and let it fall off. So here we come back to our map. You know, it talks about these sandbars off of northern Africa. We've got this path here for us, but I wonder myself if actually they're farther south than that. They're afraid that they're going to run into that, but they don't know where they are. They don't know if they're even close to Africa or not. But they know if they're going south, that there's a pretty good chance you get stuck in those sandbars down there. So that's what they're thinking about. When in actuality, we're going to find out that they were actually somehow being driven to the west. So a fathom was a distance from fingertip to fingertip with arms outstretched. In other words, about like that. Okay? And so it's about 6 feet. So what they used to do, until somebody had a good idea, what they typically do, you know, they throw this big heavy rock with a rope attached to it into the water, sinks real fast, then they pull it in. And they pull it. Okay, that's 1 fathom, 2 fathoms, 3 fathoms. Then later on, they said, well, let's tie knots in this thing. It'll be easier to pull, and we just count the knots, so you can do that. So anyway, 20 fathoms then would have been 120 feet, still pretty deep. 15 fathoms, 90 feet, still pretty deep, but getting shallower. So we better take precautions. Being dark, knowing the depth was getting shallower and hearing the waves breaking on the rocks, there was danger that the ship would break apart if it were to hit the rocks. So it was common for these ships to carry as many as 8 anchors. Ancient anchors were not as massive as modern anchors. They would be an anchor that would be heavy, but you could pick it up, you know, and carry it around. Anchors they have on ships today, you know, you don't pick up without a crane. So we'll stop there. It's quarter till, and it's time for us to stop. So we'll stop there, and we'll pick up with verse 27.